Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I'm your host, Bart Zandbergen. And as usual in studio today, Paul, our engineer. Paul, how's your day going?
It's going good today here. You know, the sun is trying to peek out, and I'm putting all those, I've decided to save up and get a Pagani, and so I'm feeling good here today. I've got a plan for the year here.
Do you have enough years left to save up a Pagani?
Don't be mean now. I can always dream. All right, go ahead.
And I'm super excited to have a special guest today, Colin Boyd. Colin, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Sure. And Paul, I broke my rule again. I think it's the second week in a row.
Really? Okay. Yeah. What'd you do?
Remember what the rule is?
I don't remember.
So I tend not to have as guests or hang out with people who are taller, better looking, or younger than me. And again,
is that why I'm on every show?
You're safe.
Well, I'm younger. So.
Well, I'm so excited to have Colin. Colin and I have known each other for about a year now, and we crossed some of the same paths professionally. But Colin comes here with a particular expertise. He is obsessed with helping his clients and entrepreneurs use stages to leverage their platform and sales. He's a certified speaking professional, and he keynotes at conferences around the world on topics such as persuasive communication and selling ideas through infusion selling. Persuasive communication. That's certainly helpful in a marriage, wouldn't that be, Colin?
Yeah, to a point. To a point. But it's a different conversation sometimes with your wife.
And I think my three-year-old has pretty much mastered that already.
Absolutely.
So Colin's clients include Coca-Cola, Suncorp, Fuji, and Hewlett-Packard. He runs a successful high-level mastermind program for content creators and entrepreneurs. He delivers his signature program, Sell From Stage Academy, which helps people turn every presentation into a money-making machine. He is an Aussie, if you haven't figured it out, who lives in Newport Beach with his wife and his two, I'm sure they're not that crazy, kids, Colin.
They're pretty cute.
So, Colin, before we can get started, tell us just a little bit about you. You're an Aussie in Newport Beach. How did that happen?
Yeah, so it was probably about just over a year ago, year and a half ago. We met early when I moved to the U.S. My wife and I had a dream of coming over to the U.S. in terms of our industry that we're in, which is really personal development. I've been a keynote speaker on the circuit for about 10 years, and you know, there's no bigger market in the world for personal development than the U.S. Mm-hmm. And we had a dream, something kind of on our heart, that we wanted to go after something. And I asked this question with my wife about 2 years ago, which was, you know, when we get to the age of 90 and we look back on our life, would we regret not going after this, not making the move? And the answer was yes, we would regret it. And so from that point, we started to make plans and then made the big move with our young little kids to move over to the U.S.
And you and I have talked about that a little bit, and that's a big move. No family here, right?
No family, no, nothing. Just our little kids and my wife. So
yeah, that's a big undertaking.
Definitely was.
Well, yeah, good. Congratulations on that, and it's working, right? I mean,
it's working well. Yes, absolutely. I mean, to land in Newport Beach, I could imagine worse places to live.
Yeah,
and so I feel very blessed to be here.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you. Since we only have limited time, we have such great things to talk about. So I'm going to get right into it. So I know through my career that speaking, whether it's on stage or one-on-one with a client, is very, very important. And you and I have talked about that and kind of the work that I think that we're going to end up doing together. But why is speaking on stage important for someone's business success?
Well, I think about, you know, anyone who wants to see some level of success in their business or in their career, at some point, you're probably going to have to get on a stage. And so, you know, just recently we went to your event and you're on stage and sharing your story and saying hello to the clients and so forth and greeting people. And there's something about a stage that positions people in the consumer's mind. First of all, it positions you as an authority. And so as soon as you step on a stage, your clients, your audience think that you're an authority. Now, whether you are or not, there's just an inbuilt belief system in human beings that if you're on a stage, you're an authority. Now, I know you are an authority, but even more than that, you step on stage and that amplifies. And so, if you're building a business and you're talking to not only your customers, but even your employees, as you're building your business, you're going to be on a stage. And so a stage could be a meeting. It doesn't have to be, you know, a keynote speaker.
Oh, gotcha.
It could be a meeting. It could be a webinar that you run. I know a lot of financial guys who run webinars for their clients. It could be an actual physical stage like you did at your event, or it could even be a Facebook Live these days. You know, that's a huge part of people's marketing. So for me, a stage is not just a physical stage. I think there's like a hierarchy. Yes, my main focus is how people communicate and engage an audience from a physical stage. But there's a whole gamut of stages that scale down all the way down to like a Facebook Live or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably the future of speaking as well, is it not?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about being confident on stage. And I've heard this over my career, over my life, and I don't remember the exact details, but people have more of a fear of jumping out of an airplane or more of a fear of speaking in front of an audience than they would jumping out of an airplane or something along those lines. Is that?
Yeah, yeah. I think it was more of a fear of
dying or
dying. Yeah. More of the fear of getting on stage than dying. I think the saying is they'd rather be in the coffin than reading the eulogy. Right. And so, I think speaking is a very vulnerable experience. Sometimes you might have heard this old adage of like, imagine that the audience is naked.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't help anyone, right? Because you're the one who's naked standing on the stage.
Yeah.
And so I know for me, when I was a young boy growing up, I was about 13 years old and I was first year of high school. I was in a boys' Catholic high school, private boys' school, and had my little cub hat on and my long socks on, sitting in class. It was actually scripture.
Yeah.
And it was coming up to my turn to read from a passage from the Bible, just kind of reading from it. And it came to me, and I remember reading and stuttering on my words and just feeling like my whole world just shrunk. I don't know if anyone's ever had an experience like that. And I remember after it feeling like, man, I can't even read in front of people. Like, I obviously am not intelligent. Maybe I'm an idiot.
As a young man,
when I was 13, right? And I remember I had such a visceral and emotional intense experience from that situation. And that really stayed with me till I was about 23, 24, when I realized that experience had shaped the meaning that I'd created about myself, about speaking in on a stage and in public.
Yeah.
And to the point of, I remember there was a different points when I would do a presentation and my hand would shake so much that I had to grab one hand with the other to stop the microphone shaking because I was in just such a visceral reaction from it.
Yeah.
And so, I want the listeners to know that this is not something that comes natural for almost anyone. Yes, there are some people, but for me, it wasn't natural. It's definitely something that I've had to develop.
Yeah.
And what I've learned through doing, literally tens of thousands of hours on stages is that a lot of it's in your head. You know, a lot of it's in the mind game. And a lot of us have had experiences in our past that affect us on an unconscious level when we step on a stage. And so it isn't actually even the situation that is affecting us. It's the meaning that we've created from an experience we had in our past that is actually showing up in our present world. And it's affecting our world right there and right then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Matter of fact, that leads into something I was waiting for a break to ask you. I recall that when I was young, like between kindergarten and sixth grade, I remember being fearless. I didn't, to your story, I would get up and read. I didn't mind asking questions in class, nothing. And then right around junior high time, I was completely the opposite. Then I asked less questions. I didn't want to speak. So, I mean, my takeaway is that I don't know what it is. That might be another session or a one-on-one session, but maybe something happened. I mean, possible something happened to cause that shift.
A lot of the time, there's defining moments in our life that happen, and we make a lot of the times unconscious decisions that basically there was a fact. So something would have happened, and there's the facts, but the facts don't matter. It's the meaning that we put on the experience that matters. Yeah. And so I'm a trained coach as well. And so when I have conversations with people, especially around public speaking, we will uncover some of this stuff because yes, you can learn all the skills, But until you shift some of the unconscious beliefs that are framing how you show up on a stage or to an audience, then you're not really going to show up as your full version of yourself. And so a lot of the time it is uncovering those things and working out what was the meaning that you created in that moment, or even the decision that you made. And you're talking about, you made a decision. I know I've done, same yeah. things. You're not a phenomenal in that area. Like, everyone's made these sort of decisions before. But basically, it's like, what was the decision that you made? And then what other meanings could have we created around that situation? And so for me, I'm always looking at trying to reframe the meaning or the decision that the person made at a younger age. And it's really fascinating. It's almost like when you make a new decision, create a new meaning, it actually shapes all the way from that moment. It actually, you'll look at your life in a different way because you have awareness around it. And so, yeah, a lot of the work that I do with clients is actually, it's a deeper work than just skill work.
Yeah. Mm. So this may be off topic, but I think it's related. I've talked to a lot of speakers or people who speak often. Maybe they're not professional speakers like you, but they speak often. Mm. And I would often ask her, I mean, how do you do that without being nervous? And like, what are you talking about? I almost threw up before I got on stage, but they're able to get through it. But then also similarly, I was saying, I just wrote down a few names of people that I've seen. Now, these are actors or performers that I've seen on stage with one personality, like Steve Martin is hilarious and seems like he has no fear, right? When he's acting, but I've seen interviews with him and he's so shy and introverted. Mm. Same with Prince, who's now no longer with us, but a phenomenal, very flamboyant actor on stage. And in interviews with him, he was very quiet and demure. Yeah. So is there some similarities with that in speaking of the personality types?
Yeah, well, I think there's a, for me, it's about showing up as a 2.0 version of yourself on stage. Mm-hmm. And so there's like the normal version that we have a conversation over coffee.
Yeah.
But when you step on a stage, you need to show up as an amplified version of yourself. And that's essentially what you're seeing, is like they're showing up on stage as the amplified version of themselves. And I think one of the challenges I know for me is that, I mean, as a professional speaker, I've had to work through is there's a stage life and then there's a real life. And so there is a level of stepping onto being on a stage. And that, I mean, even if it's just a Facebook Live or stepping into a big conversation, a big negotiation or something like that, you have to show up as the bigger version of yourself as opposed to the smaller version of yourself. And a lot of that starts with just what you're telling yourself coming into the conversation. And so most people, there's a whole kind of ladder that I take people through, but most people come in asking questions like, what will they think of me? Will I fumble on my words? Will they judge me?
Yeah.
You know, like all these sort of questions. And as soon as you ask them, what do you think would come up in you if you're asking those questions?
Yeah.
You're going to feel fear, right?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Hesitation, nervousness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but really the result a lot of the time is when someone who's on stage speaking and they're in that state, the impact on the audience is, I call it concern, because I don't know if you've ever seen someone speaking and you can just tell like they're viscerally nervous.
Yeah.
And you actually feel a concern for them. You're like, right. are they okay?
Yeah.
Because as an audience member, you want the speaker to win. You don't want them to fall flat on their face as much as we believe sometimes like the audience does. They don't.
Yeah.
They actually want you to win because it's really uncomfortable for them.
Because they're much more happy that they're up there than them in the seat in the audience, right?
Absolutely. But they're not up there. And so, it's like it comes into your head game. So when I'm coming into a presentation, I'm acutely aware of the conversation that I'm having with myself.
Yeah.
And the questions that I'm asking. And so, happy to share some of those things as well. So.
Oh, great, great. Just so you know, I want you to start thinking about it. I'm going to ask you for more questions, but I love stories on the show. I forgot to tell you. So if you can, while you're dual processing here, think of like a good story of a success story or something, keep that in mind. What mindset or beliefs does a person have to become a great and persuasive communicator?
Well, in terms of a mindset, one of the biggest ones is that there's kind of two shifts that I think you need to make to become effective at speaking. One of the shifts is realizing that whenever you speak, you are selling something. And it's not like a pushy, kind of sleazy selling. It's more like I don't care whether you're in corporate. You could be in corporate, and you go from one department to another. So my background's in corporate. I would go from one department to another. I'd speak with the department head, and essentially, I'm trying to sell them an idea. And if they don't get onto that idea, I know that they'll put their resources and their time and their energy towards some other project. And so whether you're in corporate or whether you're on a stage or you're a business owner and you're selling ideas, you're always selling. And so that's the first kind of transition that people need to realize, is that speaking is selling. It's not separate. It's the same mm-hmm. thing. And it's not about even necessarily making an offer at the end. It's just realizing that any communication is selling.
Selling yourself.
Selling yourself, absolutely. Yeah. Selling an idea.
Selling confidence.
Selling confidence, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so it's energetic. It is, you know, there's multiple levels. The second revelation is that when you're selling something, is that selling is actually serving. And so I know for you, Bart, you know, if you even think about your clients, the ones that probably have seen the greatest transformation in their world, in their life, in their finances, in their choices, in the quality of their life, would be the ones that you have, that have invested the most in you, mm-hmm. and you've had the opportunity to therefore solve and serve at the highest level,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so until we get to a place where we realize that me making an offer, and someone doesn't have to say yes, but me making an offer to a client is actually the greatest way that I can serve them, because it gives the client the opportunity, and they may not say yes, but if they do say yes, it gives me an opportunity to serve them at a higher level. And so when I'm teaching selling from stage, which is kind of one of my core focuses, that's like a big transition that I tend to see shifts in people, is realizing that selling's not sleazy, it's not pushy, it's not any of that. It's serving at the highest level. And so that's like a big shift, I think, that people need to take on if they want to position themselves as the market leader.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you kind of alluded to this earlier, but maybe we have a little more detail. So how do people use a stage, if you will, to sell their products and services?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, depending on, you know, how you do it, I take, like, probably one of the easiest ways to do this is running like a webinar. You know, a webinar is just an online platform where you're just, you know, sharing some slides and talking. It could be video or so forth. But basically, using a stage like that, which is fairly cost effective, you can get an audience fairly quickly. But essentially, you're providing value. And there's a few things that I think speaking does really well. First of all, like I mentioned before, it positions you. So it positions you as an authority. Second of all, it gives you a level of goodwill. And so that's like you have emotional resonance with your audience. And so when you're providing value and information that is valuable to the audience, then you build up goodwill. And then essentially you can make an offer that could be, you know, set up a consultation, that could mm-hmm. be an opt-in, or that could be literally, like for me, I'll sell online programs or high-level mastermind programs or things like that.
Okay. All right. All right. So here's one that's interesting to me. What is the difference between an amateur and a professional communicator?
I think a lot of the time, it comes in the preparation and how you show up. One of the biggest shifts that when I used to do a lot of work with corporations, is that realizing that I would come in and I'd say to them, "So tell me your title," like, you know, even for you, Bart, like, tell me your title, you know, a certified financial planner, whatever your title, CEO, founder, and I'd say, "Okay, cool, that's your title. Now, I want you to take that title off you, because that's not actually your title. Your title from moving forward from now on is, especially if you want to be a leader, is that you are a professional communicator. That's actually your title. Because the more you move into leadership, the more it becomes about language, the more it comes about communication, resonance with your clients, how you communicate those ideas, and the less it becomes about doing the stuff. You know, like when you first started out in your career, you're probably on the spreadsheets, you're doing the entries, you're making all the phone calls, you know, you're doing the stuff.
Yeah.
But now you're probably sitting back and having just conversations with clients, and then you send a memo to your assistant, and then they do all the stuff, right? Does that make sense?
You've been in my office?
Totally. I've been texting with you, I know. And so the higher you go in leadership, the more it becomes about communication. And so the more of a grip that you have on your linguistic ability to communicate something, the more powerful you'll be as a leader in your business, in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so language essentially creates money. Language creates movement in your audience, it creates action. And so I think a professional understands that language is not, you know, this is not an amateur game. This is something that any sort of investment of time or money in understanding how to communicate more effectively, I think is a good investment. And I know I'm a little bit biased, but just from literally working with thousands of business leaders around the world, that's one of the biggest distinctions that there's, you know, that I find is the thing that defines people that go to their top 1%.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about that, and I'm sure you're going to agree with this. So for anyone who asks or whoever cares, you know, as a student or as a parent, like, hey, what major should I do? I almost always say, you know, communications, marketing communications, because no matter what you, if you're going to be a business person, if you're going to be an artist, that's something different. Well, maybe. Whatever you do, you need marketing communications, because to your point, it would be great, right? If, and even in my industry, you can pick anything else, a CPA if you want. If I put a shingle out on my door and said, this is Bart Zandberg and CFP, and then just sit there and wait. Doesn't really work that way.
How good would that be?
So I think it's so important in business and in life. Mm. Actually, if we have enough time, I'm going to drill down and see how you use your profession with your family. So I'm sure you have some, tricks.
Go for it. Ask me whatever you're interested in.
All right, let's go there. So now is your wife in business with you?
Yeah. So she is. She like is. My right-hand person in my life and in my business.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of fascinating because I think that, you know, the more you go on in business, the more you realize what you're actually good at, and leaning into that is more and more, you know, how you become a 10 out of 10 individual in your industry.
Yeah.
And so my wife and I have realized that we obviously have quite different strengths.
Yeah.
And so she's actually very heavily involved in the strategic decisions that we make, a lot of the hires, the employee hires, the structure, the process. Like, she's a lot more analytical in that sense, where I'm more involved in the offers and the communication and the sales and the machine of that type of thing. So understanding where your strengths are has been huge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this still might work then. Are you able to use your tricks on her?
They do not work. It's actually funny because whenever I do something with my wife, she'll kind of look at me and she has a discernment gift.
Yeah.
So she can just pick, you know, I feel like if I said something wrong in another state, she'd know. Like, she'd call me, she'd text me, is something going on, Colin? You know, so no, I can't get anything past her. But I mean, when it comes down to the kids, like some little things that, you know, I'll do is, you know, I'll say to them, you know, what do you think I'm going to say about your room being in this state right now?
Yeah.
And then they'll say, well, it's messy. I need to clean it up. So all of a sudden, like, they're creating the idea. I'm not creating the idea.
Okay.
And so, like, that's some, you know, more persuasive conversation stuff.
Yeah, but sure.
But it definitely does work with the little ones.
Yeah. So you can mold them.
Absolutely.
That's right. All right. So what are the different types of stages that business owners utilize to sell their ideas and products?
Well, like I said, I think there's a hierarchy.
Yeah.
I think that in terms of selling your stuff, it is live stages, webinars, you know, Facebook lives, videos, any sort of, like, that's kind of the hierarchy to sell your stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what are some of the steps for becoming your level, a masterful speaker?
Well, there's kind of this journey that people tend to go on. The bottom level is where you're focused on yourself, right? So I'll take you through the journey. So you're focused on yourself. You're worried about what people will think of you. And so everyone kind of starts there, right? Mm-hmm. That's where I started. The second level is where you start to trust yourself, but you're trusting your intuition. And it's what I call untrained intuition. And so untrained intuition is where you basically, you get up there. It's a classic, like, 21st speech. There's no structure, no process to what you're doing. There's no training behind it, but you're just like, okay, I'm just going to give it a go. The third stage is where you understand structure. And so a lot of people come to me for structure. So they'll say, you know, Colin, how do I craft a presentation so that it makes sense, that it makes the points I want to make, and it flows? That's structure. The fourth level is stagecraft. So that's like, how do you tell stories? How do you share metaphors? How do you use your body to move? How do you anchor in the stage? It's like some of the more advanced artful side of things. Then everything starts to shift. And this is the fifth level, which is when your whole reason for communicating is actually, you realize it's not about you at all. It's about the audience. And so, I mean, just recently I was working with a client and we had a look at her presentation. And I said to her, she was presenting a case study. You know, this, you know, might even be relevant for yourself. Like, yeah, you've got case studies of clients and so forth that you potentially could present. And she was like, oh, you know, I was just sharing like the lessons that I learned from the case study. And I said, well, this whole presentation is about you. And she's like, yeah, it is about me because it's about my client and my case study. And I said, the presentation has nothing to do with you. I said, think about, put yourself in the seat of the audience. What would the audience want to learn from this case study? Like, what value would they want to take from it? And even in the framing of setting up the case study, I was like, how do we make this attractive and give some motivational juice for this case study so that the audience would want to lean in? And she was like, oh my gosh, I never even thought about that. I thought the presentation was about me presenting my case study. And I'm like, it has nothing to do with your case study, even though you're presenting the case study.
Yeah.
And so the biggest shifts that people make is realizing that their presentation literally has nothing to do with them. And they think they do. And that's what amateurs think. Amateurs think their presentation has, you know, they're doing their speech. And a speech has nothing to do with you. And that's the fifth level. And the highest level is what I call purpose. And purpose is when you tap into, there is a greater reason for the communication piece that you're giving that's bigger than you, it's bigger than them, the audience, and it actually taps into a greater purpose. Like, I look at some of the greatest speeches of all time, you know, like a Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream. Yeah. You look at the conviction in his eyes, the conviction of the energy that he brings to that communication piece, and that piece has nothing to do with him. Even though he's saying, I have a dream, it's not even his dream. It's not even the audience's dream. He's trying to tap into a greater purpose that's even beyond just the people listening. It's like this core conviction about creating change on the planet. And so when you tap into that, and I think anyone can find that, doesn't matter what you're selling, because you think about the flow-on effect, like even, you know, for you and the impact that it makes on your clients, but, and then you think about the relationship that they will have in their families, the peace, the financial peace they have in their families, how they relate with their kids, how they show up with their family because they have more financial peace. You tap into that purpose. It's not even about money, even though that is an outcome of it. It's actually about the peace that they have, the connection that they have with their family. You tap into that and you think about, you picture them relating with their kids, relating with their wife, with their husband, whoever your client is. And all of a sudden, the presentation that you're giving has nothing to do with you, has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with the purpose that you're creating and leaving a like the mark on the planet.
Yeah. Wow. You've taken speaking to a whole new level, Colin. I love it. All right. I'm going to take that case study as a story. That was pretty good. I like it.
Thank you. Yeah.
And because we're out of time, so I'm going to use that as a story.
Yeah. We could keep going. Yeah.
It's been so awesome having you here today. And I do have the honor of asking you what I call my final thought question. Mm-hmm. So please share with us, if you will, your ultimate lesson learned as your career as a professional speaker coach.
I think for me, reflecting on the ultimate lesson was that all of us have a level of genius that we've been given. It's like something that comes easy. And things that come easy, you need to work hard on. And so the quicker you discover what that genius is, like that thing that you could be known for as a 10 out of a 10 for, the thing that comes easy, you work hard at. Whatever that is, that's for me has been the lesson that, you know, I look back at one time I was a pizza delivery driver and I was the worst pizza delivery driver you would ever experience. There's a whole story around that, which we could get to at some point. But now, you know, I worked out what my genius was. And then from there, I've been able to lean in on it. And so I just want to encourage all your listeners to think about, you know, to work out what is that genius and what is the thing that you can lean in on and then, you know, put all your chips on in that in that area.
Oh, love it. We're going to have you back and find out about the pizza story and the,
the pizza story is good.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
All right. You're coming back for sure. Colin, how can people reach you?
So I love to connect with people on Instagram, which is just Colin Boyd with one L, C-O-L-A-N-B-O-Y-D. And you can check out my website, which is colinboyd.co.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a country singer. I can't get the .com. Oh. He's touring around, but I've hit him up, but he won't give it to me.
Yeah.
So it's his .co.
Well, Colin, thanks so much for having you coming in today. It was great having you in studio. I think this is something we're going to have to revisit. And thanks so much, everyone who tuned in. And we look forward to being back next week. Cheers.
tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest, Inc., and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest, Inc., under SEC registration.